tell you one thing, Josh. I'll tell you, since your listeners might want to hear this, one of the scariest things I've ever seen or happened to me. It happened in like 1986, I believe. I'm getting old now and the dates are kind of slipping, but there was this place in Geneva, close to Geneva, in the Smith Mills, called Burbank's Lake, and it was on this big forested hill in the bottomlands. And this big lake nestled in between two old cemeteries. One was a slave cemetery, and one was a slave owner cemetery. So we always heard it. This lake was full of monster bass. And buddy, I've always been an avid fisherman. That's arrowhead hunting, hunting, fishing. That's me. And even after 1975, the crazy stuff that happened, I never let that bother me. I never let that keep me from going into the woods and enjoying what I love. And the woods is like my home. So Burbank's Lake, and there's monster bass. We've always wanted to fish. We heard tales about it for years. And so we make plans to go fish, but it was no trespassing. No one was allowed to be there, but we decided we was going to sneak in with a one-man bass boat, and there was about six of us. And my older brother, Harold, when we told him, he said, "Oh, don't go there. Don't go there. It's haunted. It's a haunted lake." And we're like, "Oh, what do you mean it's haunted?" We'd always heard that, but we wanted to know some details. He said, "Well, me and my brother-in-law, Doug, 10 years ago, was out there fishing in the middle of that lake, and dark caught us at that lake, and we decided to go home. And when we tried to put the boat in to shore, he said the shoreline erupted like 10 elephants were just breaking down trees and running around, making the worst racket you've ever seen. So we had to push back out into the lake, and we wait for the sounds to die down. And we'd try it again, and every time we tried it, it was the same thing. It sounded like a bunch of elephants was there waiting for us. So we ended up spending the night in the middle of the lake. And in the morning, when the sun came up, we made our escape. So y'all don't go there. Well, we weren't scared, even though we've had lots of things happen to us. We decided we're going to go do it, and we went and did it. We snuck in, and there was two men on the one-man bass boat fishing. And unfortunately, I didn't get to be one of them. And so we just had to walk around the lake, and I'm fishing, casting my lure in as I go. Copperheads and water moccasins everywhere. Just everywhere. And it's kind of scary just how many snakes was there. But we made our way over to the other side of the lake. And I just had caught a 2-pound bass on my plastic worm. It's the only fish anyone ever caught that day. But and we put it back in, and I cast my lure out again and got it hung up in a tree limb. I'm like, "Oh, man, it's the only lure I got. If I lose this lure, then I'm done fishing. I just have to stand here until everybody gets ready to go home." So I grabbed my pole and started walking backwards, right, trying to use enough exertion and force to free that lure. And it came free suddenly and so fast, hit me right in the chin and buried two of the three treble hooks into my chin. Ooh. So it was a really a memorable night. And so it took everybody to get, we had a half a gallon jug of kerosene with us, just for emergencies in case we had to build a fire or whatever. And it took everybody to get that lure out of my face, right? Just pulling my face and stretching it, pouring kerosene on it, and finally got it out. Well, by that time, it's getting dark, and it takes 30, 45 minutes with two people on that one-man bass boat to make it to the other side of the lake and 30, 45 minutes to make it back. So he started ferrying everybody across the lake, and it ended up me and my little brother Victor were stuck on the other end of the lake, and night fell. And I just had enough time to gather up a few little twigs and dry branches. There was hardly anything dry because it had rained two or three days before and everything was still really wet. So I used the kerosene to start the fire. And it was pitch black, Josh, just pitch black over there and really creepy. And the fire was going for a few minutes and it started to die down. And all of a sudden, we started hearing tree snaps and tree breaks all around us and heavy footsteps. it sounded like every step of these things were taken would break a branch, and it just went crazy. And as soon as it happened, we knew exactly what was to blame for it, because we'd already been exposed to these creatures before. So they basically surrounded us, me and my little brother, and had that little dinky fire going. It wasn't much, but we were so scared. We thought we were going to die, because as the firelight grew closer to us, you know, and the circle of firelight diminished, the sounds got closer and closer and closer. It was following the darkness. And we knew eventually that they would reach us. So I waited until the sounds got to about 20 or 30 feet away, and I took the kerosene and I threw a shot of it in the fire, and it blared all up, you know. And we could see 60 or 70 feet all around us, and we could see nothing. There was no grunts, no heavy breathing, no growls, no nothing, just the sound of breaking trees and limbs and heavy footsteps. And when the fire died back down again, they would come again. And I'd wait till they got a little bit closer, and the next time it would be like 15 feet away, and I'd throw more kerosene in the fire. We wanted to at least see what was going to kill us, right? We thought we were going to die for sure. And the fire glared up again, and there was nothing there. So we didn't know what to think. We were both just scared, you know, terrified, really, because that's what these things do. They somehow exhibit some type of mind control, and the fact they can instantly instill in you the fight or flight reflex. Or to me, I'm a pretty brave guy. You know, I faced death several times, but I wasn't really scared, but I was scared that night. So we were getting low on kerosene, and I had like maybe two more shots left in there to throw in a fire. And so the very last one, I waited till the sounds got within 5 or 6 feet of us. You know, so there was no way we could not see these things when I threw this kerosene in the fire. So they were within 5 or 6 feet of us. It felt like they could reach out and grab us. And I doused the fire again. Fire blared up again. And there was nothing there, Josh. Whatever these things were completely invisible to the human eye. And we were out of kerosene. And here come those damn footsteps again. So I told my brother, I said, are you ready to swim? We're going to have to swim for it. And he said, yes, yes. So I had one little stick with a flame on it about 2 inches high. And I grabbed that stick up and held it up, you know, in front of me. And we backed down to the lake. And as soon as we were getting ready to jump in, because the sounds followed us all the way down to the lake, even where there were no trees, there were still the breaking sounds, which made me come to the conclusion that all that racket they were making was some type of auditory hallucination. But we got down to the lake, and about that time we heard our brother. He was on his way back, and he said, "What the heck's going on over there?" He saw me, you know, saw the fire blaring up and everything. We said, "Hurry up, come get us, come get us. We're ready. Let's go, let's go." So he pulls up to the bank, and he goes, "Okay, who's next?" I said, "Who's next? We're both next. Nobody's staying over here. You don't know what's been going on over here." He says, "No way, Bubba. This is a one-man bass boat. It cannot hold three people." I said, "Well, we're going to test the limits right now. Get on there, Victor." So Victor laid across the back of the boat, and I laid across the front, and there was like a quarter inch distance between the top of the boat and the water. And I said, you know, "Let's go, let's go." So it took us almost an hour with three people wanted to get across that lake. But that was the second scariest moment of my life. And it showed me that these things, these Bigfoot creatures, and I don't care how many people want to deny it, how many people want to think it's crazy or ludicrous, these things can achieve an invisible state to the human eye. And it was really brought home to me about 3 years later in broad daylight. Me and my ex-wife and our another couple were fishing down at the Boos Farm in the Green River, and it was autumn. It was kind of chilly. There was a dead leaf fall all over the forest behind us, right? And we get down to the bank and start fishing, and the girls were on one side and me and my buddies on the other side. And you know, we wouldn't get any bites, so I was in kind of a playful mood, so I would take some dirt clods, and I would throw it over at the girls, and then look away real quick, and when the dirt clod landed, they would say, "Oh my gosh, what's that? What's that?" You know, and I'd be like, "I don't know what you're talking about," you know, just messing with them. And I did that 3 or 4 times. And the last time I did it, I didn't look away. I just kept looking at them and smiling, right? So they knew it was me at the final little trick that I was playing. And they were all cussing me, you know how they are. And about that time, a bigger dirt clod comes from above us on the bank and lands right beside the girls. Well, I knew immediately that someone had to throw that dirt clod from up above us, right? We couldn't see it because of the angle of the bank. But as soon as that dirt clod hit the ground, I stood up and started scrambling up the bank to see who or what it was up there. It had to be a man, right, to throw that. So as soon as I stood up, I heard footstep crunching in the leaves. 1, 2, 3. And on the 4th footstep, which should have been the 4th footstep, my eyes, I was scrambling up the bank the whole time. On the 4th footstep, my eyes got above the bank to where I could see above us where I saw the trajectory of the dirt clod, and I looked to where they'd come from, and there was nothing standing there, and the four step never fell. It only took 3 steps. So I get up there, and I'm like, gosh, what the heck? There's nothing up here. And my buddy comes up, and we're looking around, and I'm telling you, Josh, in dead leaf fall, you can track a squirrel for a mile in that. All you have to do is get down low enough to see the disturbed leaves, right? There was nothing there. There was no disturbed leaves. And whatever threw that dirt clod took 3 steps and stopped. And we looked that area over really thoroughly, and there was just nothing there. So it freaked the girls out so bad that, you know, we had to leave. So that, you know, whatever these things are, and I know a lot of my peers laugh at it. The notion that they can cloak, that's what they call it, cloaking. But I'm telling you right now, it's true. It's 100% real. They can do it. And whatever your explanation of Bigfoot is, has to include an explanation of how they can achieve that.
We've done shows on the cloaking, and we called it the Shimmering Phantom or something like that, because we didn't want to call it the Glimmer Man, because that's a movie, but... the way that they cloak and the way that they look when they do that is so incredible. and I had people giving me stories from all over, you know, and it was just, it's crazy. Some of the things they've told us when we were compiling some of those stories about the cloaking. And I believe that it is a Sasquatch cloaking. I don't know about Dogman doing it, but I know that Sasquatch for sure. Some of the things that they're, you know, and I've had a couple people tell me Dogman too. But I mean, I don't know.
I don't know about Dogman.
Yeah. I haven't heard as many stories about that as I have Bigfoot.
So, really?
Yeah. Not with the cloaking thing. You know, I had one guy that said that he was watching this thing. This was recently. This was after, because every time I drop a show, and I've told you this, Barton, I'll get flooded with reports about that subject, and it's like, okay, well, I just dropped the show, so I got to wait until, you know, I don't want to drop another one of, you know, within a month. But a guy sent me one. He was a hunter. He was up in West Virginia, and he was hunting, and West Virginia is very wooded, very, you know, and he was up there in a tree stand, and he said that it began to rain, and he said he saw this thing that looked like the Predator. And so when I asked him, you know, you have to ask, because I already kind of knew what he was going. And I said, okay, did it look like the Predator from the movie? You know, was it chasing Arnold Schwarzenegger? You know what I mean? And he's like, no. I mean, when it, you know, you can see when it's cloaked, when it has the glimmering, shimmering looking, you know, you can kind of see it's there, you know, it's invisible, but it's not. And then I, you know, he started going into detail, and what he told me, he could make out the head, which looked very canine, like he saw the ears sticking up at the top, and it wasn't until it turned to the side he could kind of see the snout. And he said if it hadn't started raining, he wouldn't have saw it. He said he absolutely would not have seen it. He goes, it stood there kind of halfway behind a tree looking at me. He estimated it was about 7 foot tall, but it wasn't overly large. He said it was, you know, he could kind of make out the size of the body. He said it was kind of lanky. And then he said it just jumped down on all fours and ran off. And so that's a cloaking of a dog man, you know? So, I mean, I don't doubt that that happens, but you get more of them, with Bigfoot. And there's actually a place called Palmetto State Park here in Central Texas, in San Antonio, outside of San Antonio. I think it's east of San Antonio, where there've been several encounters with something invisible that chases people, and people have been pushed, grabbed, slung into bushes and stuff. And I've had people that there are stories of people that have. And then one guy that sent me one, he said he was there when he was young, in his 20s with his girlfriend, and something invisible grabbed him and his girlfriend, like kind of pulled them and yanked them and threw them into the bushes, and they got up. But it was more like a mischievous thing, you know. But it scared the heck out of her, and she got up and running hysterical, you know. And then he had to catch her and then tell her, you know. And then she thought, you know, it was a ghost. But, you know, I've gotten stories out of there about this phantom-looking creatures that they resemble Bigfoot. If they get a look at them, you know, they look like Bigfoot, you know. Recently, I know I just talked about it on my live stream. I don't know if you saw the live stream last Tuesday, Bart. I know you watch it sometimes.
I try to watch it every Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah, and there was some ladies that saw a Bigfoot run across the road. I believe it was raining too, and that's why they saw it. And it was invisible; they could see through it though. And it was they saw it like it was physical, and then they saw they could see through it, and it ran across the road.
Both times that it happened to me, Josh, I could not see any outline like the predator or any other outline at all. It was completely and utterly invisible. And I've had lots of people, you know, I've been honest about it ever since I've been a public figure, and so many people scoff at it. But I've had people tell me their own stories where they see these things walking through the woods. You can only see them from the waist up, and you couldn't see the legs. The legs were invisible. And just a couple years ago, I had a guy right in Henderson County saw one run across the road, and only the legs were visible, nothing visible from the torso up. But when you start talking about that, people say, they start hollering, woo, woo, woo. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You can take your kindergarten vernacular and your kindergarten intellect and stick them where the sun don't shine, because it is a fact. These things can do this. So if you can explain to me how a flesh and blood animal can do this, I'll happily revise my conclusion that these things are some type of supernatural element, right? There is no animal in the world that can take 3 steps away from me. 3 steps, and they sounded heavy, really heavy, and me not be able to find them in broad daylight. It's not possible. And so there were not even any footprints on the ground, no disturbed leaves, nothing. So explain that to me with your Gigantopithecus theory, and make it make sense, and I'll listen to you. But there is no ape in the world that can turn invisible to my eyes. It's just not possible. So there's definitely more to these.
One of the things that when Ken Gerhard was on my show. I think we talked about it off. I think we talked about it off air. Yeah, he's a good guy. I like Ken a lot, and you know, we're friends with him. But one of the things he talked about, I think it was, and we talked about it off camera or off air. And Ken, me and you talk pretty regularly on the phone, just like me and Ken. And if people get you're a cut up. You're like me. You like to cut up. Ken is too. Now Ken is so different than you though. And when you talk to him on the show, he's been on the show about 3-4 times. He's always so kind of stiff. You know, he's very businesslike. He's very businesslike's not the word, because he's not about the money. He's very just adamant about this is this and this is that. You know, he talks very plain, matter of fact. You know, he doesn't, you know, there's not a lot of joking. But off, you know, the air, off camera, me and Ken, he has told me some of the funniest stories I've ever heard in my life. You and Ken have made me laugh so much. And it's hilarious. I'm like, Ken, you know, there's one story between me, you, Ken, and we'll never be able to tell that story. It's a shame, but it's
so weird. I wish we could, but we can't.
But anyway,
look, everyone needs to laugh. You know, one laugh a day, it does you good.
But Ken is very. Story, that's your story is a good one. It's a good one, but we can't, you know, insult people. But so Ken is a very not, he doesn't like to insult or be rude or anything like that. But one of the things about him, we talked about it, and he said, he goes, there are no giant apes in North America, like as far as prehistorically. Like he said, there's never been any evidence of them. So what are Bigfoot? I mean, they're not giant apes. I mean, he knows that, you know.
Ken's right, and there are still no giant apes in America.
Yeah.
These are not giant apes. They're just not. They seem to have abilities that take them into the supernatural realm.
And Ken's not a supernatural woo guy at all. And the thing I want to say this too about Barton. I'm going to say something about Barton before people start saying, "Oh, he's a woo 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 woo." No, Barton and me have a very similar view. We believe that there's more than one thing going on, and you can't put everything into a box and say this is what this is, this is what that is. One of our colleagues, and we're not going to mention names, and I'm not going to say, but he believes that. And he's not the only one. There's two or three out there that believe that Bigfoot is running around just kidnapping everybody. Okay? I mean, it sounds silly when you say that. Okay? Yeah, that could account for some of the things that are going on. But this person's very hostile toward the flesh and blood people, whereas I'm kind of middle of the road. And I know you, Barton, you know that there is very possible there's two different things going on. I'm not trying to talk for you, but we've spoken at length about this stuff. I mean, it's very,
I'm not hostile to anyone who believes different than me. That's not me. I don't believe in hostility to someone who's just trying to tell their point of view or their story. I would never disrespect somebody just because they believe me, right? And I'll be frank, most people, when I tell that story, I'm sure they don't believe it. But it's true, and one of these days, you're going to have to reconcile that with the lines that they're thinking along. It's not right. It doesn't explain anything. The Gigantopithecus theory doesn't explain anything. Nothing at all to me.
And not only that, but I mean, when you start looking at some of the things that have happened to me, all right, and I'm gonna tell this, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was called the Tower, the Haunted Tower. I did a show and the Haunted Tower. Yeah. And I've told you, Barton, off air, that was one of the most terrifying things that ever happened to me. I was a kid. I was just a kid. I was an 18-year-old kid. And it was a horror. I mean, an absolute horror. You know, I had no choice. I had to work, sink or swim, you know. And back then, jobs weren't just hanging off of trees like they are now. And so I was like, you know, I had to work. And I was a sink or swim. I had no safety net. I couldn't call mommy and daddy and ask for help. That wasn't an option. You know, I just couldn't do it. My dad was just not a dad. That he just wasn't a person that ever, he's just not going to help you. He's just that way. He's just not that kind of guy. He's not a nice guy. So I just couldn't do anything. So I suffered for months working at this haunted building. And let me tell you something. I saw the same thing I saw when I was 15. I saw this dog man when I was 15 years old with my friend Daniel. I've told that story many times. I've been interviewed by a magazine for that. It's been retold and told. Not going to get into that. But I saw that same creature in an office building, like on one of the floors. It was the cleaning lady. It became that thing. I looked and I saw it through the door. Yeah, I saw it through the door of the the cleaning supplies on each floor, you know, and she was in there, and I saw it, and I'm going like, okay, I closed my eyes, and I thought, this is not correct. That is not what I saw when I was 15. That is this demonic entity. It's mimicking that, and I kept telling myself this is. I was praying. I was God, please help. You know, I was constantly praying. I never stopped praying in that place. I was so scared. And I said, you know, that is not what that is. And the weird thing about that building is it affected somebody horribly, some people horribly. Some people, it affected them, you know, kind of just like, in, you know, like a normal haunted place. And then some people were completely out of touch with it. They didn't, you know, maybe something would happen. They would just rationalize it. But there are people out there who I believe are so shut off from spirituality. They are so closed off from the spiritual side of life that they are almost dead to that. I mean, there could be a spirit right in front of them. Five or six people could be looking right at it. And they're the one, I didn't see anything. And they really didn't, because they're so closed off to it. They really believe that we are physical beings having a spiritual experience, or you're having a spiritual experience. When it's the other way around, we are spiritual entities in a body. There's like an avatar. There's like a body we're just inhabiting. Yeah. And so I put the theory out there, you know, about I was talking to Lyle the other night on the phone. I think you were still on the phone with us and we were having a conversation. It wasn't about this, but we were talking about some stuff about, you know, and then it bled into that. And I was talking about a werewolf that was spotted in off of Massachusetts Beach. It was kind of a prestigious area. And people were seeing it for years back in the 70s, early 80s, and then it just ended. And there was weird story. There was a weird story attached to it that a guy that lived there had died, and that all of a sudden the sightings had stopped. People's pets stopped dying. Somebody told me one time that there was a little brief like mention of it in the news or something that somebody believed. You know, there was a werewolf about. Well, this old guy that lived there for a long time in that community, he died. And then the sighting stopped. I mean, the stuff that was going on, but people started seeing, every now and then they would see at dusk, this werewolf looking creature walking along the beach, looking into the ocean, and then it would just fade away. And I thought, you know, that could be, I don't know if you were on the phone with me and Lon, we were talking about this, and I told him, I think that could be a ghost. I talked to Scott Martis,
my phone died.
Yeah, your phone died or something, maybe you jumped off. Yeah, we were talking about that, and I was telling Lyle about it. But I had the late Scott Martis, really good friend of mine, and we were preparing a show before he passed, and we were going to do a show with Ryan Tremblay, and we were going to all talk about aquatic cryptids. One of the things that Scott had come around to before he passed, he had told me that he believed that there could be a spiritual aspect to some of these water cryptids that people were seeing, because people were seeing these plesiosaur-looking creatures in Loch Ness and in Lake Champlain, you know, the different
Ohio River. Yeah.
Yeah, the Ogopogo. He said that people were seeing things and they were disappearing. And I was like, I told Scott, I said, we were just shooting the breeze one night, and I said, Scott, what do you think about this? Because, you know, I used to call him up to consult him about prehistoric creatures. He liked that I knew a lot about prehistoric stuff, you know. And the two people that I referred to was him and Ken Gerhardt. I would talk to them about these prehistoric animals or whatever. And I had gotten a report about these giant kangaroo with big teeth. I'm not kidding. This was in Australia. So I referred the guy to Scott, and Scott and me were kind of trying to figure out what it was. And Scott was just like kind of starting to get a little more fascinated by the land, you know, the creatures on the land too. He was starting to kind of, and he told me, he goes, you know, I don't know what the heck this is. You know, there's so many. He goes, I thought 100% flesh and blood. He's like, but then I get all these weird reports and, you know, and I was giving them reports and telling them, talk to these people, you know, whatever. And he started kind of going, you know what, it was his idea. And he was like, we should do a show. And we're going to explore that, you know, and you can be, you know, the advocate for this is the possibility. And then I'll do the flesh and blood side of it. And then we'll kind of bring it all together. And Scott was a very smart guy, you know, and we had planned on that. And then he died suddenly. And so that kind of blew that out, you know, the water. But a really good guy. I actually named my cat after him. My cat's name is Martis, my black cat. I love him. But Scott's a good dude, man. And I really miss him dearly, because I used to, he would give me a lot of, a good, like ideas, and we would talk and stuff. One of the things that I always respected though about him was that even though he was really on the other side of the fence, almost completely when we first met, he began to look into the other side. And he told me, he goes, I'm not against it. He goes, I like to keep it separate though from the flesh and blood, you know, and that's fine. But I told him, I said, the lines blur. I mean, and it gets to the point where it's kind of hard to ignore. You know, it's really, when you get as many reports as I do, and I think it's because of the platform, because of the show. Well, I know it is. It's not like it's 100% the show. I mean, what am I saying? I'm like, I think it might be. You know, no, it is. But me and you've talked about this, and we've talked about some of the reports that have come in. You know, it's so weird. You know, every time I drop a show, you'll get 10 reports. Just right up the bam, bam, bam. You know what? I heard your show the other day. I know a person that had this happen to her, and she's, you know, I'll put you in touch with her, blah, blah, blah. You start talking to the person, and then they'll give you a report, and then they'll tell you, I know somebody else, blah, blah, blah. And then it just goes on and on and on, and then you can do a whole nother show, you know, and it just blows up. It builds up. And so every time I drop a show, then I get more reports. Well, when you get enough reports and they start, you know, adding up to half of them are people seeing things that are apparitional in nature. Like, you know, they'll see, you know, a wolf looking creature and disappears, or a hyena looking creature and disappears. There was a guy that gave me a story of Supernatural Sin City. And he, you know, he saw this saber-toothed tiger-looking thing leap at him. Me and Weatherly talked about it, and it was so weird. Like, he was trying to take a leak, and this thing had jumped at him, and he goes, and I closed my eyes, I got prepared to be attacked, and there's nothing. It disappeared. You know, and then I got in my car, you know, and he got out of there, and it was in the desert going toward Las Vegas. That's a creepy area anyway. But, you know, he you know, there's reports of that, like, all the time. You know, how do you...
How do you ignore those reports, right?
Yeah.
So you have cognitive dissonance so bad that any report that doesn't align up with what you already believe, then you throw it out. Well, that's the worst kind of researcher, the worst kind of investigator. I just can't imagine having that you know, way about you, the train of thought as to, if this doesn't go along with my Gigantopithecus theory, then it can't be true.
Yeah.
So it's called an argument of incredulity fallacy, right? If you don't believe it, it can't be true. But as far as the aquatic anomalies and the water monsters, I can only, and it really, this goes to anything about anything that I've experienced, I can only go by what I know and what I've seen and what I've experienced with my own eyes. I've never seen a water monster disappear. I've seen several of them swimming in the Ohio River and the Green Rivers, and they didn't disappear at all. They acted like
very flesh and blood,
normal flesh and blood creatures, whatever they were. But, you know, who am I to say what they are? Because I really don't know. All I know is what I've seen. And I tell the truth about everything I've seen, even though it might hurt my credibility. I don't really care. I don't care about my reputation. I'm not trying to make money. My words are not stifled by the fact that I'm trying to preserve my income. So I'm perfectly free to tell the truth and everything that's happened. So I have no repercussions. So if I tell the truth and it's not what everybody believes, it doesn't hurt me at all.
Well, Barton, you're very much like me. Yeah, you're independent with your, like, you have a very successful business that you run. I know that about you. And you make your own money. You don't need this. I don't either. I don't either. I don't need it at all. If this ended tomorrow, I'd be fine.
Right. If I depended on my income for my books or whatever, I would have starved a long time ago. You know, it's the internet society that we live in that people don't really read books anymore. Not many. If you can't read it on your phone or the PC, then most people don't read it. So,
well, and podcasts, you know, are making, not, you know.
I have no chains. I have no bonds on me. Chaining me to the theories that are just the most popular and make the most money. I don't care about that. All I want is to get at is the truth, whatever it is. And the truth is, these things are, especially Bigfoot, they're not what people think they are. And anything that can become invisible to me right in front of my face is not a flesh and blood creature to me. Unless you can explain some kind of natural way that they can do this, then my conclusion is, if just one of these things exhibits supernatural abilities, then every one of them must be at least suspect by association, right, until something's proven to me differently. And if one day that I'm wrong about this, Josh, and somebody kills a Bigfoot and brings a body in, then I'll say, look, I was wrong.
Yeah, well, even that doesn't prove that there aren't there's another element going on. Not
right,
to me.
Because the chimeras run around and everybody's making distinctions between dog man and Bigfoot. And I heard somebody the other day say, well, Bigfoot's human. The DNA's proved that. But the dog man, they're not human. Okay, so when it comes to these hybrids, how do you make a distinction between an ape-human hybrid and a wolf-human hybrid? by their logic, that all of the chimers that have half human, then they're all human, right? So to me, Bigfoot is not human. I don't care what anybody says. No human being can do the things it does. No human being has the form of mind control that this thing does. I've talked to people who hear heavy footsteps coming up to their tent at night in remote locations and scare the crap out of them. And what do they do? Inexplicably, they lay down and go to sleep. So, you know, that's not something that you would do, right? So it's something that was forced on you by these things, however they do it.
They definitely, there's some ability out there that they have. You know, and then the infrasound, that's another one, especially with the dog man. I've gotten reports of a guy who worked for, well, he was technically a police officer, but he was kind of doing a security detail, out in the Nero water treatment plant. And he saw this creature. Long story short, I've told this story on DER, and, he gets out and he works now. He lives out in Arizona and he's had nothing weird happen to him ever again. But, buddy of mine, his buddy worked for that group. I don't want to say the name, but then, and so he said, I got a guy that can tell you a crazy story. And so the guy met me and my brother, we were at a bar and we were at my friend Arash's bar and we're just sitting there talking. And this guy tells me this crazy story. There was three of us there, you know, me, Arash and D. And so we're sitting there listening to this guy and he's a cop and he's chain smoking and he is so nervous, dude. And he's drinking beers. And so I told him, let's slow down on the beer. Let's, you know, cause you're, he goes, I'm just so nervous when I talk about this. And he said that this thing went, you know, and it just the infrasound, he said, it went through my body. He said, and then he said, and this is another weird thing. He told me this, like I talked to him a few months ago cause he had a hyena, dog man sighting, which I'm going to tell eventually at some point, but I was going to give it over to Ryan, let him look at it. But he was doing a report near Scottsdale, and he picked up a report of a colleague of his. He didn't work near Scottsdale, but this guy, a friend of his does, is a cop that had a hyena cryptid sighting. And so anyways, he was saying that this infrasound loosened up kidney stones. Like, I'm not kidding. He said that. He told me, Barton, he said, dude, you know, he goes, I had kidney stones, I guess, because right after that, I had two of them, and they just, they came out real quick, very painful, you know, and the doctor said they might have been up there for a while, and they just loosened up, and it was right after that infrasound. That thing's roar went through his body, and it loosened up his kidney stones. That's what he thinks happened. You're talking about some power. He said it hurt his chest. He said his heart was skipping beats for 2 days, and he thought, man, it's either the anxiety. You know, he told his wife, which was his fiance at the time, but he told her, you know, there's something wrong. I have an anxiety. And he goes and they look at his heart. His heart was skipping. Eventually, the doctor said, well, it did. They gave him some medicine, whatever. But he said his hands were shaking. He kept, you know, just waking up, having cold sweats. He said he was having nightmares, but he couldn't remember them. Just a lot of weird stuff, you know, and these creatures, they do these things. And now one of the things that I was going to talk to you about when you've done all this research on the LBL, the land between the lakes, I wanted to get into that.
Yeah, 15 years ago.
I mean, so one of the things that we learn that could possibly be, not saying that it is, but that we learned that these weird looking creatures that were seen there. Now, I got a report out of that area of some things that I think looked like devil monkeys. They were kind of like a smaller, more slender, you know, and it's odd. I got that report, and then Roger, he comes out and says, hey, these things looked more like they had human-like legs. Not really right. Human-like, but the way he described them to us was that they were, long limbs, but they weren't dog-like. They didn't have the backward-bent legs. Which to me is a telltale marker of a dog man. I mean, all these other things that people are seeing with the straight legs, I don't know what that is. That's, you know, Gugwe maybe or something. I don't know. But me and Ryan did a whole show on the Gugwe. Unfortunately, the audio was terrible, but when it wasn't able to be put onto Paranormal Roundtable, but it is on Whisper to a Scream. I did a few shows with Ryan on his podcast, but we talked about the Gugwe and what it is, what it could be. But this thing that Roger described to me and you and the Hendersons, Johnny, that these things had normal legs. They didn't have backward bent hawks, you know.
No lupine legs, no digitigrade legs. And they had longer feet, a little bit longer than normal, real muscular with real heavy thighs, real muscular upper body. So, yeah, there are several different kinds of these dog men. And, you know, the supernatural kind who can manifest in any shape they want is a whole different story than what Roger encountered. The one Roger encountered was, to me, it's just plainly obvious. It was genetically engineered by the government. It was a physical flesh and blood creature that was able to be killed.
Which is why there were people that showed up, possibly from the government. And now a lot of what was talked about in the past, you did the research on that. Do you want to talk about that?
Right. Well, I first heard of that, the Beast of LBL massacre. I guess it was 2004, 2005, and I reached out to Jan Thompson, and we kind of got a conversation going, and we kind of become friends online, right? And I mentioned to her that I would like to come down and interview her and see what, you know, what I can find out. And, so that's what I did, and she was a really seemed like a sincere person. You know, and I had my friend at the time he owned Grendel Films, and he come down and with me, and we filmed it all. And he didn't believe Jan at all, but I thought she was a pretty credible witness. But that's when, and I put that story in Mysterious Kentucky, and that's when everybody started taking notice. And you have all these other researchers coming down and. Or saying they come down. And really, the only research I know that have been there is me, Mark Maycheck, Johnny Henderson, Jody Cook. We've all been down there. I personally don't know of anybody else. I haven't seen anybody else down there. I'm sure Kumbo and Nick Valenti and all of them have made their trips down there. But everything that they really that they write on the subject comes from Jan Thompson's story, and they make the mistake of thinking Jan Thompson was there, but she wasn't there. She heard the story secondhand, according to her, from two cops that worked the scene. So that's a secondhand story right there. So why is her story more credible than Roger's? To me, it isn't. They're just as credible. Each one is just as credible as the other. It's plainly obvious that the scene that Roger left was altered and staged after he left to resemble an animal attack, which the local authorities found. So, I mean, it's pretty elementary if you just have an open mind. And you know, I've talked to Roger for at least 150 hours. You know, I know he's not telling a lie. I know he's telling the truth. And it's a gift that I have, really, because I've talked to so many liars. And I've been around pathological liars my whole life, and so I can tell the difference.
And when you broke that story with Jan Thompson, that kind of like gave the story a life of its own, and it kind of made like everybody believe that that's the narrative, right?
Right, exactly. And keep in mind, that's just a story that was told to Jan. Jan had an experience of her own where this creature came and attacked her house with her cousin in it, you know, a couple of her cousins in it, and that's how she was able to describe it to me where I could sketch it for her. And that's where the Beast of LBL sketch comes from.
So that became the narrative, basically. And so all the arguing and fighting that was done on my show on that Tuesday live streams was, you know, and you kept saying this to me too, in private and in public. You were like, look, all of this is based on this, you know, the story that I got from this individual, and the arguing over the validity of any other narrative was really pretty ridiculous. You know, that's what you kept maintaining that, you know, and so if somebody else comes along and you were very honest and you were like, look, if I was wrong, I was wrong. And I want to be the first one to admit that I was wrong. And I thought that was very admirable. And folks, if you want to question Barton's integrity, I can tell you right now, the guy doesn't make money off of his books. In fact, I'm going to come out and say this. Most of the guys writing these books and doing all this, they're doing it because they enjoy it. They're not really making a lot of money off of it. You might be able to scratch out a living, but, you know, Nick Redfern and Ken and Lyle and David Weatherly and all these guys are my friends. They're not making a bunch of money off of this. There's people that say the most ridiculous things. I'm going to throw this out there, that we're all just making money. We're just getting rich off of this. This is not my stream of income. This is not Barton.
Right.
Me and Barton have own companies. We own businesses. That's how we make money. Not this. You know, you ain't going to get rich off of this. Ken and Lyle make a living and that's it. But Lyle has a band too, so he does that. But they're not making a bunch of money. You know, you think they pay you a bunch of money to go on TV? They didn't pay, you know, they didn't pay me that much to go on there and tell my story. You know, I did it more as a favor to Michael Sheehan because he's a good guy like Michael Sheehan. And I said, okay, I'll do it. You know, and he said, well, if you got that story, I really need another person. And my person that I'd given him had flaked. She flaked out. In fact, I think she was just scared. She didn't want to talk about it on the air. And she just really didn't want to talk about it. She was done with it. And it was a story that I had told on DER anyways. So I said, well, you know, and she got scared and cold feet, whatever. So I stood in and I told Michael Sheehan, yeah. And they liked that story for the Church of the Forgotten. So I did it. I didn't make money. I didn't make anything off of it. You're not making a bunch of money just talking on TV. They're, oh, well, Ken and Lyle are on TV all the time. They must be making a bunch of money. They're not. And I can tell you Barton's not either. Not from these books. This is something that you do. If you get into this and you want to do it as a field, and I see a lot of people wanting to do it as a profession, I'm like, good luck, because you're not going to make a lot of money off of it. It's just the way it is. You got to have a passion for it. You got to have another business to fall back on. This is not, you're not getting rich off of it. There ain't nobody out here getting rich off of this. I can tell you that.
No one. No, there's no one. Right. So it was a passion for me, and I just wanted to tell the truth to everybody. And I realized that half the people or more would think that I'm a liar or a profiteer or a hoaxer or a loon or whatever. I'm on drugs. But it didn't matter. So my only goal is to tell the truth, and that's what I've done. And if you don't believe the truth, that's up to you. That's fine with me. I'm not going to lose any sleep tonight because someone don't believe me. Because in my heart, I know that I've done all that I can, Josh. And which is simply to tell the truth to the people. And what they do with that information is just their own business. They can accept it and believe it or not.
You're a very honest guy. You've told me some very, let me give you a fun fact about Barton. Tell somebody this one. If you don't want this, I can edit it out, whatever. But Barton admitted to me that he drinks 8 Coca-Colas a day. And I was going like 8 Coca-Colas a day. I was like, are you kidding me? And Barton goes, no, man, that's how I keep from getting sick. I was like, you gotta be kidding me.
I've been doing it for 30 years.
30 years of eight Coca-Colas a day. Doesn't get kidney stones. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Like, so you got, you got this weird, you know, body that doesn't, you know, it's just crazy. It's freaky. And so you're sitting there going like, oh, wow. And to me, you know, the first thing I would tell somebody, stop drinking Cokes, 8 Cokes a day. You know, you got to stop doing that. But that's your vice. I mean, you know, you're not a drinker. You're not a smoker. You drink soda. And that's one of your bad vices. And you were like, yeah, I know it's not good for me, but I do it anyway. And then you kind of joke about it, you know. But the funny thing is.
Well, I've had no problems at all.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like you were very honest about that. And like, you know. You just threw that out there as a kind of a funny, you know, and so I know that you are willing to just admit to any of your whatever, like most people are like, that's a weird quirk. Not only is that weird, but that's just like very unhealthy, you know, and you just told me that, and, you know, I was talking about trying to be healthy and doing this and doing that. And you were like, yeah, I drink 8 Cokes a day.
The last time I was with the doctor, he said, I'm doing something right because I'm in really, really good shape.
And you said you don't drink water hardly at all.
Hardly ever drink water. Yeah, when I'm really, really hot, I've been sweating a lot at work, I'll take a few sips of water. But it's usually a Coke. I have a chocolate milk every morning. One chocolate milk every morning with my breakfast sandwich, a light lunch. But my metabolism is so high strung, Josh, that you know I don't gain weight. I could eat 20 pounds of food one day And the next day I've lost 3 pounds, you know.
I can't. Nick, crazy. And Lyle and Ken are all. And here's another fun fact. It's weird. It's very weird. You, Nick, Lyle, and Ken are all the same age. You were all in bands, rock and roll bands. Lyle still is. You're all big metal guys. You all like heavy metal. It's very weird. You're all the same age, you know. Nick Valente is the same age as you guys, too. Y'all are all that same age group, you know, and it's so weird that y'all all have that in common. It's just a funny, weird. Yeah, it's a synchronicity. It's a weird synchronicity. And you guys are all thin. You don't gain weight. It's like, good God, dude. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to gain pounds and make it up to 175 to 180. But it's not going to happen because I burn 20,000 calories a day at work. So no matter how much I eat, you know, it doesn't really. And my wife she's so frustrated because she can look at a cupcake and gain 3 pounds, and I can eat a whole case of them and lose weight.
And you have a very physical job, too, though. I mean, and it's weird. Here's what's weird about you drinking the 8 Cokes a day. You have a very physical job. You paint houses. You have a company. You do that. And so you drink. You don't drink water. I just thought that was so weird, you know. And you told me that, and you didn't, you know, and you're not one of those people. You don't give a crap, you know, if what I think about your habits or anything like that. And you've been very forthcoming and honest about a lot of things. And one of the things and that was just a weird sidelight, folks. I'm not trying to, you know, but here's something that really got me about you, Bart. When we first started talking and being friends, you know, I'm very picky about people I talk to and deal with. You know that. I try to be, you know, keep my circle small, but I have to interview certain people and certain people I like and certain people I don't. I'll interview them and be like, that's not going to happen again. But, you know, you guys are really good guys. But one of the things that struck me about you was that you – had the most to lose by Roger being correct, because then that would change the narrative of what, you know.
I had nothing to lose about Roger being correct.
Well, you know what I mean? Like you had originally broke that story, so the story would have been, Bart Nunley's wrong, you know, if that's the case, you know, if the original story wasn't the correct story.
That would have been fine with me, Josh. It would have been fine. I would just say, hey, look, I was wrong, and this is how it really happened, and move on.
Well, you didn't have anything to lose, like, you know what I mean? But, like, your reputation, you didn't care. You were just like, you know, I just want the truth. I want to know the truth. And that right there.
Don't care about reputation.
Yeah, exactly. That struck a chord with me because I thought, you know, here's a guy that's willing to say, and most people would vehemently defend their narrative that they've been saying for 20 years. And you were like, hey, if this is the way it is, and this is the way it is, and it sets it on its ear, and it changes everything, then so be it. And you were very adamant about that.
I just want to know the truth, Josh. That's my mission, is to get to truth and share it with the people. And, you know, I don't care anything about popularity. If I cared about popularity, I never would have wrote in my books half the stuff that I did. I would have left all what they call woo out of there, because that's financial suicide. It really is. Nobody... If your narrative about Bigfoot, for example, doesn't fit the most popular notion, is that they're some kind of relic hominids running around by the hundreds, escaping. We can't capture them. We can't kill them. We can't even so much as study them in their natural environment. Right. So I just want the truth. That's all it is. And popularity doesn't matter to me, because I'm not making any money. I'm doing it for good reasons, not personal gain. You know, like I say, if I wanted to make personal gain, I would be talking on all the circuits and selling books at every conference and being on TV. I turned down just about every offer that I've ever had to be on TV. I've only been on TV 4 times, but I've turned down about 50. And it's not, you know, it's not me. I'm not looking to be that guy that is the face of the paranormal or anything like that. I'm not looking for fame. I'm not looking for fortune. I'm out here telling the truth as I know it. And that's what I'll continue to do until I'm done.
And that's all you can do in this field, because you're not going to make money at it. Yeah, that's all you can do. So just have integrity and tell it like it is. I tell people's stories. I retell them. And if the audience can decide, if you guys at home decide, this person's bogus or bogus, you know.
Now, my integrity is not for sale at any price. And if I thought for 1 minute that I was trying to mislead people or to saying things that weren't true, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. So I have to be me 24 hours a day. And, you know, when you see me out walking around in the woods and pictures with swords and stuff, that's not a photo op. That's just me, dude. And there's always somebody taking pictures of me everywhere I go. But I dress the same every day, unless I'm painting, which, you know, I come home and change clothes. But you can spot me easily outside just by the way I dress, because I dress the same way. I'm me all the time. It doesn't matter whether I'm in front of a camera or in front of a typewriter. I'm still going to be me.
Let me ask you this. When we were talking about the LBL earlier and Roger's story, of course, with the weird legs and all that, you said that you believe that they were government chimera.
Right.
Is that your final answer?
My final opinion on that, on Roger's story, yes.
Woo!
Otherwise, they could not have been killed.
No, I'm just playing, dude.
Otherwise, they couldn't be killed, huh?
Yeah. You know what? I wonder about that, because when he first told me that, I just thought it was another one of these species of devil monkey looking creatures, because I had gotten a story that I made a mistake of dismissing years ago out of the LBL. And I thought, that sounds so ridiculous. These people were out there drinking, first of all, you know, so I just kind of tossed it out. I didn't put it in the one-off that I should have, the folder that I should have. And, you know, now I get a story and I'll tell Anthony, hey, you know, what do you think of this? We'll look at it, or my wife will look at it. We'll talk about it kind of as a team, you know, and if it's questionable, or my brother, and we'll all read it, and then we'll go, I don't know, you know, but we don't want to dismiss somebody's story, because I made a huge mistake, because when he told that story about those, that's what got me to think that maybe Roger was right. I don't know. I'm not going to pass judgment one way or the other, but when he started describing the creatures, what was that, Byrne?
Yeah. I was going to tell you, Linda Godfrey, you know, my dear friend, my most excellent friend that I've ever made on the internet, she shared a story with me a few years back about a witness who had seen the dog man and dog woman with a litter of little dog babies, dog children, walking down the LBL, and I thought, this doesn't fit with what I believe about the dog man. But you know what? I could be wrong. I'm only human. So, you know, include this in your book if you're writing about LBL. So I did. And now that Roger's story has come to the forefront, I realize that these things could be being bred by the government. Maybe that's why the government was there on the scene so quickly, right? Because they were already there.
Yeah.
So it's the only thing that really makes sense to me. Why, you know, a lot of people come up and said, "Oh, they were wearing cologne or something, that perfume that triggered these dog men." You know, bull crap. Come on, man. You know, some people have said there's as many as 60 people getting killed in LBL a month. Come on, dude.
I've heard no two. Way. Is that true? Because I've heard that there are two people go missing a month out there.
No. Not true. When someone goes missing there, it's made known that they're missing. And whatever happened to them, you know, you probably don't get to hear what happened to them. But so from 1970, me and Johnny Henderson, rest his soul, we were counting all the stories that we'd heard over the years about the people who had been murdered in the land between the lakes from like 1974, 75, all the way up. And we counted 15 people. So that's 50 years, 15 people.
Still, though, if they're being killed,
it's a lot.
Yeah, if they're being killed by something, that's a lot. And I've heard some crazy stories. I don't know if you've heard this one. This real quick, they were canoeing down the river, and they watched a dog man go into a tent and killed a couple. Have you heard that?
Right, that's Jody Cook's story. Yeah. Jody's Cook's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this video, and I helped him do the video. I donated a lot of the video for my Hunt the Dog Man documentary, and I gave him permission to use it in his. So I finally watched that video at Johnny Henderson's house a couple weeks ago. And I'm listening to this guy telling his story, and Jody took everything he said as true. And he didn't offer any proof. Of course, there's no proof of anything. Mm-hmm. Like I say, if you're waiting around for proof, you're going to die an old man, completely, with, you know, unsatisfied. You're not going to accomplish anything. So you have to find the proof in the integrity of the witnesses and the honesty of the witnesses. But Jody was, he took everything this guy said as true without proof, and yet he demands proof of everything Roger says. Okay, well, let's demand proof of something Jan Thompson says, right? She can't provide any. No one can. And so to demand proof of one witness over and let everybody else just believe them without proof is kind of, you know, it's not right. It's kind of, you know, hypocritical. So, but I don't want to control any narrative. I just want the truth. Whatever the truth is, that's what I want to put out there. If Bigfoot are aliens, I want to put out that out there. If they're something else, then that's fine. You know, it doesn't matter to me. I have no dog in the fight at all. I'm just a guy out there trying to get to the bottom of things and let people know what's going on. And it doesn't matter to me what it is, as long as it's true.
Yeah, Barton, one of the things,
Jan,
too.
I want to make clear, Josh, that I believe Jan. Mm-hmm. And Jan doesn't believe Roger, but that's because she can't understand, like Jody, that the scene was altered after Roger left. The scene was altered to make it look like it's something that it wasn't. And instead of the dog man being in the tree dead, they put the little girl up there and maybe slashed up the bodies a little bit to make it look like animal attacks, right? But it's the same story, you know. A lot of people think, well, it's got to be a different story. No, it's the same one. But there's two different scenes, one the original scene and one the stage scene that was allowed to be found. So once you can, if you just think about that for a second, you'll see how much sense that makes. And, you know, I would never, ever be hostile to any witness for any reason, much less because their story differs a little bit from what I've said or written or anything like that. I treat witnesses with respect. You know, I'm grateful that they'll come out and tell their story, which, you know, the atmosphere has changed over the last 30 or 40 years, Josh. You know, back when I first started this stuff, people, if they come out and admitted to seeing something like this, they would be ostracized, ridiculed. People have died in Kentucky because they've come out and told their stories. That's how bad it used to be in the 60s and 70s. But now the atmosphere is totally acceptable. You know, come out and tell a story and, you know, you're not really put through the ringer like you used to be. So
still and not that, totally accepted, though. I can tell you from
still
being...
Not totally accepted, but, yeah, not totally, but 70%, whereas back when I first started, it was maybe 2%.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was accepted. You know, you couldn't really... I've always had a gift for walking up to somebody and engaging them in a conversation and extracting from them the strangest things that's ever happened to them in their life. You know, so I was down in LBL with Mark Maychek and Johnny Henderson just a couple months ago, and we stopped at this little burger stand to get everybody something to eat. And we got the food, well, we ordered the food, and there was five or six or eight tables, you know, outside where people were waiting for the orders to be filled. And at the very last table was three park rangers. So we order food, and Mark takes off, and I didn't know that he was going to the bathroom. And I'm just following, like, well, where is he going? Where are we going to sit down to wait for our food? And I'm about 10 or 15 feet behind him. I see him take a right into the bathroom, and I'm standing right beside the park rangers, right? So I just sit down at the table right next to him, and I'm 3 or 4 feet away, and I start talking to him. Hey, guys, how you doing, you know? And they seem real friendly and everything. And one of the guys actually brought the conversation up that I was a writer and was down here looking for stories about Bigfoot and Dogman and everything. And one of the park rangers actually confided in me that he had worked in 8 different parks in the last 10 years or 15 years. I can't remember how long he'd been working, but he had seen Bigfoot in every single one of those parks except LBL. So I gave him my number, you know, and everything, and maybe he'll one day he'll decide to call me and give me some more information. But that's the kind of man I am. I have a gift for bringing out conversation, and people trust me. You know, I don't know why, but they trust me to tell me things they wouldn't normally trust people to say. So I've always been lucky that way.
Let me ask you this. You said that that park ranger had seen Bigfoot in every one of those parks but the LBO. Why is that?
Right. Well, he just started working at the LBO a couple months before then. And he had a supervisor sitting beside him, and he was a bigger guy with red hair. And when we started talking about this, he started giving this guy a look, you know, like, you know, better shut your mouth. But the guy, the other park ranger, didn't. He was more than willing and more than happy to tell me, you know. And I don't know. I hope he didn't suffer any consequences for doing that. But it's people like that, that's where you get your information from and you get your knowledge. It's not science. Science is completely helpless to tell us anything about these creatures.
Yeah, you're right. It's incomplete about a lot of things.
Right. They're unwilling to do it or incapable of doing it. So, you know, and it's like this COVID mess. Follow the science, okay? Well, science doesn't mean what it used to mean. So once this COVID mess has proven that science can be monetized, privatized, and propagandized. So you have to ask yourself, whose science are we supposed to follow now? The science that I follow is my own eyes and my own logic, right?
What, and Barton, and what about this theory that and has been proposed to me, and I actually talked to Johnny about it too. We've gone over it before, but I mean, just to reiterate for the people that you know, is there a reason why there's Dogman more often than LBL than Bigfoot? I mean, is
there
a reason?
About the same.
But one is in the north, is in the south, and is that correct?
Dogman's in the north, usually, and the Bigfoot sightings take place in the south.
But it is, I guess, let me rephrase that question. Do you think that they stay out of each other's territory?
No.
No.
Because the Spotsville Monster incident that happened in 1975 involved both Dogman and typical Bigfoot inhabiting the same area at the same time. So, no, I don't think they stay out of each other's area.
Because there's a place down here in Central Texas, and I've talked to you about it before, and there's still a lot of people, like you said, they don't like to talk. Scorpion used to have a job at a Whataburger. It's a place here in Texas, real popular. And he worked there part-time, and I don't know why. I think he worked downtown, and he was just kind of burned out. And so they needed night shift, and they actually paid pretty well. But he went and he was working down there, and he had this guy that was his boss that I became good friends with. And we started talking about all that. And he thought I was writing a book or something because I asked so many questions. But he had a wealth of information. And I checked out some of the locations, and I talked to some of the people that were from there, people that had lived in that area. And one of the things I kind of made a map. Me and my brother and Scorp kind of put together sort of a map, not precise or anything, but just blue dots were Bigfoot, red dots were Dogman. And we started to realize that the Dogman were in the west, Bigfoot were in the east. And I was like, what the heck is going on? Why are they separate? They would be a few interminglings, but mostly, and then there was a goat man, black, always black. And it was near this old cemetery on a place called Purgatory Road. Creepy name. And the place was called Devil's Backbone. And there have been story after story after story. There was a guy named Burt Wall years ago. He was on Unsolved Mysteries. He wrote books about it. It's a very creepy place. I've been out there one of, I think, two times where I'm confident, 100% confident that I heard a dog man like howl. It was a place called the Haunted Valley. And when I look at the little map there, I'm thinking, ooh, that's right in the middle. You know, and me and Linda Godfrey went over this too, and I think we did it on the air and off the air because me and her talked off the air for a while. One of the things that we talked about was the difference between, you know, where you see a Dogman, where you see a Bigfoot, how there's kind of a divide. And then she said, you know, in her words, there was Goatman shows up kind of as a third party, you know. and that's true. You get a lot of goat man, but you don't get a lot of, like, you don't see people who see half horse, you know. You see every once in a while I'll get a centaur story, and a weird thing about that is I'll get, like, I have a little bit of stories about that, but they're not nearly as numerous as the goat man, dog man, and Bigfoot. Those seem to be the big three that you hear the most about. I even did a show called Goatman Origins, and we released it on Whisper to a Scream and on Paranormal Roundtable. And one of the things that all that research we did, me and Ryan, we did like a good month of stuff for getting prepared for that. We really got prepared for that episode. We got a lot of stories about the Goatman, you know, and there are some pretty heinous stories that are attached to that particular creature. You know, and of course, like we're talking about the divide. Just first of all, are there any Goatman stories out of LBL, or is it just Bigfoot Dogman?
No, I'm aware of no Goatman
stories. But so it's okay. So that's out of the way.
Mothman, there's a couple of Mothman sightings there as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, or some type of winged humanoid.
Let me come back to that. So the divide thing, the theory about them being in two different areas, that is pretty accurate, right? I mean, that does happen, apparently. But they do go into each other's territory, but they tend to stay, like, they're like in a group of sightings will be, I'm correct about that? Like, am I right? Like, they'll be
right,
in one, yeah.
LBL anyway.
Yeah, well, that's how Devil's Backbone seems to be, too. Now, there is an area that I think kind of makes a triangle, kind of a weird triangle, and it's three towns in particular, but there is a river. There's two rivers in that area, and one that runs, there's actually a drive, real pretty drive. You can drive down. It's a river road, actually call it. They're in Central Texas, and when you're driving through that road, there have been numerous sightings of Dogman and Bigfoot along the river from people I've talked to. One story I was given by some people who, like, we're talking about the spectral aspect or whatever. There were several people, and this was tied into one of the Hernandez Ranch episodes I did on PRT. There were several people who saw it, and I think I might have told you this, and like four people saw the Dogman, the other two people didn't. And they were all right there staring, and only some of them could see it. That would lend some sort of credence to the fact or to the opinions that we have that these things could be, you know, some sort of spiritual or metaphysical creature. I know that some people believe Bigfoot to be absolutely 100% a cryptid, in the every sense of the word, a cryptozoological creature. Dogman is not. They believe that it's not.
Bigfoot is not a cryptid either.
Yeah. See, and there's opinions that go back and forth. One of the things I know about Dogman, and there are a couple of quacks out there who swear up and down they have evidence. They've never been able to produce a shred of it. I've offered thousands of dollars to anybody who could produce this evidence. Gotten none of it. Nobody take me up on it. Nothing. I mean, it's like there's no evidence at all. There are tracks and things like that, just like there's for Bigfoot. But where is the real evidence for these things? That's what gets me. Thousands upon thousands of people see it, but then there's no evidence. Like, there's no real hardcore physical evidence. That tells me there's something else going on. And somebody threw out the other day, they were arguing with me, and they said, they found chimpanzees that had been released in the wild in Northern California. I don't know if this is true. They just sent me some article. I read it. 70 years or 80 years later, 79 years, something like that. And they found what they believe were the descendants, whatever. But they were in hiding for 70, 80 years. And I'm like, okay, so what? So we finally saw them. Okay? We still have not been able to prove or say anything about Bigfoot or Dogman. Nothing. Goat man, none of it. I mean, you can't. So, yeah, there could be flesh and blood thing going on. I believe that they can manifest as flesh and blood. The one I saw shook a fence with its hands. I mean, there's no way, or whatever they were, the weird looking claws. But when you start getting into the meat potatoes of it, there's no evidence. There's absolutely nothing. We have nothing to go on. The police come. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, sorry. Nothing we can do. Talked to this cop years later, told me crazy story about some stuff that went on, you know, claiming that there were a lot of people that had seen it. But like he said, nothing, no evidence. We can't prove anything. He had seen tracks back in the 70s. But, you know, there's no proof.
Right. Other than there's tracks. Plenty of evidence, John. Plenty of evidence, no proof, zero proof.
Yeah.
So the evidence is mostly anecdotal.
Yeah.
But you also have physical evidence of footprints and hair and scat. And so that's considered evidence. And even a witness testimony is perfectly fine in a court of law. You could get somebody put on death row just by witness testimony, but it doesn't work in the unexplained phenomenon subject. So.
And when you were talking about
lots of evidence, no proof.
Let's get into that. When you were talking about the Mothman sightings, you also I wanted to cover that, the flying, what you were talking about, because in your book you talk a little bit about everything. You talk about UFOs. You talk about these weird. There's several sections of the book that you get into. You were talking about the Mothman looking creature. It's funny because I just did the Mothman, but what was that all about? And then if you could tell your Pteranodon, can you do that?